Parshas Emor. Parshas Emor starts off. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Emor el Kayanim, say to the Kayanim, Bnei Aaron, Vilmarta Olam, and say to them, Lenefesh, Leitamo, Ve'amov, that no one should become Tame of the Kayanim. So the first Rashi says, Emor al Kayanim, Emor Vilmarta. What is the double expression of say? Says Rashi from the Gemara, Lahazir Gedolim al Ketanim, so that the older people should give warning to the younger one. There's a whole sugya to get in from here to the mitzvah of chinuch and the mitzvah of taking. Do you have to take stop kids from doing averus? Maybe only is bezna mitzvah, other people mitzvah. Is the father chayev? We're not going to go there. Just one point is that seemingly this is really the only place where the Torah says it. So why is it specifically over here? Why specifically over here do we bring out this fundamental point, which seemingly might apply in Kol Torah Kula? Why are we bringing it here in the Parsha of Kayanim becoming Tame to dead bodies? So the Miznayim L'Torah, Rabbi Zalman Saratzkin, says that, and then he says the name of his father-in-law, so I guess that's Rabbi Yosef Leibtelzer. I don't have the exact cheshbon right now, who's a shver. I guess it's the grill. It should be the grill. It was Rav Zalman Saratzkin Shver, right? Should be. The grill, I think, right? What? The blade? Blazer tells me. Yeah, the his father. His father. Okay, so the grill's father. Okay, fine. I'll call upon him. So he says that when how's his father? Oh, yeah, I'll call upon him. And when we have goyim surrounding us, then it's pretty clear set boundaries. We might do similar things, but we understand that our eating is not their eating, our walking is not their walking, our speech is not their speech. So it's similar, but it's not really the same thing. And that's brought out by the mere fact itself that they are doing it. We see them and we get repulsed by it, or hopefully we should at least, and therefore we stay away from such a thing. Whereas, for instance, if you have a kohen child who is, or you know, someone over bar mitzvah who is sitting there, or even young, whatever, because that's what we're saying with his tumah, who's sitting there, all his friends in school are playing around wherever they want in the fields, not paying attention to where basic forest is, not paying attention to where tummy things are, not paying attention to any of these things. It's much harder for him to be able to want and to be able to stay away from and not engage with these things. Because, what do you mean? Aren't his friends good Jewish people also? And therefore, it's specifically here that the Torah is bringing this out in a place where you would think it's even harder. That here specifically, make sure they understand they are more special and they should know that it is usser. A similar thing, that playing ball in Eretz Yisrael is much more looked down upon and frowned upon than in America. And people wonder why. And the answer is very simply, in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, the team players and everyone over there are chilonim, non-shomer Shabbos, but you think, well, still in all, they're Jews. So it would be much, much easier in such a situation to get enwrapped in who they are, what they are, what they represent, and thinking, well, they're still Jews, he could do it, I could do it. And therefore, it's much more frowned upon about even the playing with. Whereas in America, where it's all gayim, all people who are, especially these days, repulsive and definitely inwardly hate us, like many stories have shown. So therefore, it's very easy to say that, okay, you play your own little game, and it's not as big of a danger of being in capture with and caught up with such a thing. That is what you would see from here. With David Moore, a very, very chashuv paisik in Eretz Yisrael, grew up in England, but he's been in Eretz Yisrael for years. Very, very big Yerush Shemayim and medaktik and mitzvahs. Very, very genius of a paisik. Went in Brisk many, many years. There was a shirim there. He said it would be better, technically, it would be better to read a Gayesha novel than to read the Jewish literature that they have out there, that it's really a Geisha book. But what they do is, it's really a Geisha thriller. What they do is they stick in a few Jewish names, Avrami, Yitzi, Yossi, they stick in a couple Minyanim, maybe even a Daf Yomi Shir, and then all of a sudden the whole book is Jewish. So the Geisha book, you know that you're reading a Geisha book, whether you feel you should stop it or not. At least you know what it is, and maybe one day you'll even think, maybe I should stop it. And when you do think that, you'll be able to do that one day. But if the whole yachas is that, oh, I mean, there's a Gemara, and then there's these great novels that you're probably supposed to know them, just like you're supposed to know the Gemara. It's very hard to be able to differentiate properly. So therefore, again, bringing out the same point of what we're saying over here, that all over the Torah, good, we have mitzvahs, and good, hopefully the kindleach will chop not to do them, because the goyim are doing them, and we're not doing them. But by a kayin, there specifically, the Torah is bringing out this point, that hopefully he won't be mushpa from playing with his friends, and he'll be able to stand up to what his parents are telling him, and that is why specifically it says it over here. Okay, weiter, moving on. The Pasuk says, by a kain hedit and by a kain gadol, right? First it says a few halachas of the kain hedit, and then it says halachas of the kain gadol. By the regular kain, it says, who is he, yes, allowed to touch? His seven relatives. The order of the seven relatives starts off with mother, father, and specifically it says mother first and then father. How come? Usually we find the entire Torah, or you would think that we should say a father first. So, interestingly, the Ibn Ezra says that women die first because they're weaker. I mean, and definitely throughout history, definitely many different lifespans and ages. So I guess maybe that was something that was true in his days, or maybe it was true in the Torah's days. I have no idea. Oh, for sure. But maybe in different times of history, it was different. Maybe different domains are different, but definitely, yes, definitely that seems to be the case these days, like you're saying, 100%. I hear. Maybe this was normal at Ebenezer's time, so he's saying it made sense to him to, I don't know. I hear. The problem is that by the kind gadol, it says his father first. By the kind gadol, where it's saying that a kind gadol cannot touch people, so it's saying don't touch father, don't touch mother. Why is it saying father first? So the Maral Diskin, the Tiferes Yankiv, the Rabina answer that the reason is because you generally will not have a Kohen Gadol that his father is still alive and then his mother dies. Why? Because what's a kain gadol? Generally the most chashva, oldest guy around. So you're not going to have that a kain gadol who his father's around and his mother dying first. Generally what's going to happen is that you're going to have a kain gadol die, then his son's going to become kain gadol, and then his mother dies. Fine, so then that could work. But to have that, you have a kain gadol, his father's still around, they are saying right now is not usual. We'll get to different ideas in half a second. So first of all, the shverkite is because who says the minoy happens right away? Who says he'd be appointed right away? Secondly, what if his father's old and he wasn't able to work and they appointed someone else as kain gadol? So, then what?
Yes, my kain gadol was kain gadol for 80 years.
And then?
Which means that his father's probably
around. I hear. Interesting, yeah. But it definitely could be that you have a kain gadol around with his father. The Rosh Daskin, the Skuni say that very geshmak like this. Again, so let's just recap what we're trying to say here. We're trying to say that a kain head yait, a regular kain, is yes, metami to these seven people, and a kain gadol is not. So therefore, by a kain head yait, you want to say the smallest chiddush first, and then the biggest chiddush. In other words, you want to say he can touch this person, he can even touch this person. there's a rule in the Gemara that a mother is always for sure someone's mother. It's the Gemara's rule that there's no doubt about someone's mother. A person's mother is his mother. A father is only a person's father through chazaka. We assume that this lady had this child with this man. So therefore, Baika in Hedyait, it says mother first. Why? It's saying you can touch your mother. She's for sure your mother. But you could even touch your father, who's only your father through chazaka. Even him you could touch. Even him you could touch. Oh, one second. Very good. And then Memela, the other way around also, is with Kain Gadol. That Kain Gadol can't touch. So by the can't touch, we're saying you for sure can't touch your father, who is only your father through chazaka, through assumption. But even your mother is for sure your mother, you still can't touch. Okay, that would be a very nice setup. Well, Mike's exactly like I was asking over here, that what does that mean, father through chazaka? Very nice through other things. If it's only your father through assumption, then mimanav shach. If he's your father, then you're a kain and you're allowed to touch him, or by kain gadol you're not allowed to touch him. And if he's not your father, then you're not a kain. You're not a kain at all, or presumably you're not a kain. Maybe your father's Yisrael, or your Chalal, whatever it is, and you'll be allowed to be Metame to Mason. Exactly like Dayan was asking over here. Very good. Okay, fine. Pasuk says, Isha Zayna v'Chalal Eikachu v'Isha Grushama Isha Leikachu. A Kayin Hedek cannot marry a Zayna, a Chalala, he can't marry Grusha. The end of Maseches Gittin, basically the last Mishnah, says, Machlekes Bishamai Bishilol, how and when do you divorce a lady? Bishamai says, if she does a Dvar Aveira. And Bishilol says, if she burns your food. Okay, Bishilol's for another Shmuz. Bishilol's for another Shmuz. Hakaponim, Bishamai, who says Dvar Aveira. So seemingly, any time a lady gets divorced, according to Bishamai, is only because there was an Aveira. If so, according to Bishamai, Frekta Pnei Yeshua, why does the Pasuk have to say that a Kain can't marry a divorced lady? Once it says that a Kain can't marry a Zaina, that lady is automatically, if she's married, going to be a divorced lady. In other words, there's no such thing as a divorced lady without already being a Zaina, according to Bishamai. So Frekta Pnei Yeshua, why do you need to say divorced lady? According to Bishamai, there's no divorced lady who is not already a Zaina. So the Pnei Yeshua answers that no, it's talking about he did it even though he wasn't supposed to. He divorced even though he wasn't supposed to, so she's not a Zaina, but she's a divorced lady. A few other terutzim here. One of them is that Bishamai is saying when you have to divorce her, even if it's against her will. But if everyone mutually wants a divorce, so you can do it even if there's no Zaina. Someone else answered, the Heintiga, someone these days, an older fellow, what's it called, the Talmud Chacham answered, that maybe you could say like this, that the Edom came, said that a lady was Mizana, so Bez and Paskin, she's a Zoyna, she has to get divorced from her husband, and then the Edom become Edom Zayman. So you know what Bezdin erases? Bezdin erases the Zoyna. They're willing to erase that title. But the grusha, the divorce can't be undone. Once she's divorced, she's divorced. So here you would have a case that she's a grusha without being a Zaina. Enochrami. Right? There was two things popping on my head. First of all, Ayle, what you asked me last year, and I looked up today's Mefurasha Gemara, Mefurasha Mishnah in Yevamos, that a Kayin that was even engaged to an Amana, but certainly married to an Amana, and then becomes Kayin Gadol, he's allowed to keep his wife, and he's even allowed to marry his wife as long as he was Morris before. That's one thing. Second thing, on this point of what you're saying about a Kayin and whatever marrying, I think there's some famous story. It sounds true enough because it's in most books. Doesn't mean it's true, but it could be it's true. Some shidduch that was married for 20 years, no kids, maybe only 10 years, whatever it was, they spoke to Gedolim about getting divorced, so hopefully they could remarry other people and have kids. And I forget exactly the whole story, but he said, yeah, I mean, it could be he said make a party, whatever, because it was a very nice marriage. Whatever it was, the kids are a gansazach, and they got divorced. And a few weeks after they got divorced, it turns out that the wife is pregnant. The wife was pregnant with a kid, and the guy had been a kohen. And they just went crying. They went straight to, I think they lived there, and so they went straight to the kohen, crying away. Hashem davening for an eitz or something. Seemingly, there's nothing to do. I think they went to Rayashiv. They went to one of the gedolim. I don't know if he gave the eitz, but then it came known, whatever. Basically, this fellow had been adopted. He was never a kain. Why did his parents let him go thinking that to make brachas vatolos all the year with duchening, whatever it is, akopanim, Hashem always has eitzes if you're true to his word. And lamaisa, he happily remarried his wife. Anyways.
If he's adopted.
Then he's not a kain. He's not a kain. He's adopted by kainim, then he's not a kain. Right?
Right. But if his original, his birth parent,
he's not a kohen? Yes, then true. But I guess it was known that they weren't right. Yeah, right, that's always a scary thing that has to be figured out. True, yes. I think Reb Jerry saying that Lamaisi, you have to make sure that where he came from, he wasn't a kohen. Right, that's a fair point.
Did Beit Yaakov make sure?
I don't know. That far, I don't think the storybook's right. That's a good point. That is a good point. An interesting Beis Yosef in Ebenezer, he says, a kohen who marries a grusha, he brings down B'Shem Dar Chaim, you give him malchus, and if you're chayshish, that'll go to somewhere else to do nesias kapayim, then you cut off the tips of his fingers. As he says to Beis Yosef. And the kasha is that the Shulchan Aruch himself, who's the Beis Yosef, says that if a kohen's chozer b'tshuva after he marries a divorced lady, then he's allowed to be nice kapav again. So I guess the kasha would be why exactly we cut off his fingers. If he has a recourse, he could get out of it by doing tshuva. So why exactly would we cut them off?
If we think he's
going to
do what?
If we think he's going to duchen, a kohen who marries a divorce, he's not a duchen. If we think he's going to go duchen, then we cut off his fingertips. The Gemara Kedushin Samach Vav Amud Beis says an Evan Ivri of a kohen cannot become a nirtza because some say that you're not allowed to be matal mum in a kohen. You're not allowed to give a kohen a blemish. So how would we be allowed to do this? You'd have to know how that would stem. Lamaisa, for those who are worried about fighting with kainim in their class or chas v'shalom if they're smacking them or whatever, Lamaisa, the Shoel Meshiv says that there is no iser to be matal mum in a kain these days. So I'll say you'd be safe. Many other dinim you wouldn't be safe, but I'll say you'd be okay.
Rebbe hitting his tummy, or the adopted father hitting the son.
I hear.
One of the reasons why a kain is not allowed to marry Usha is because if he's married to, there's only one reason. If he's married to his wife, he should before breaking up his family, he should think twice, because if he divorces her, then he can't get married.
So that's why what? That's why he can't marry a divorced wife?
It's one.
Right. Yeah, some reason. We'll get to Amon in a second with Kain Gadol. But let's go. Just another couple points about this interesting thing. The Ebenezer, the Ramah says that a Isho's Mizana with a guy, Bezdin cuts off her nose in order so she should seem disgusting to her husband. Yesh Chokim, and some people don't do it. Yeah, what's it called? Yeah, they. The Baal Turim says by Tziyuah v'Sisarif, it brings down from Rehuda Chassid that they used, but by a Zayna, they used to burn into her forehead that she's a Zayna. And that's why she was kisses, that Tamar was kisses upon now, so Yehuda should think she's a Zayna trying to cover her forehead. Fine. Okay. Why? One of the reasons brought down for why a Kohen Gadol cannot marry an Almana, in which his Kenim says, is because we know the Kohen Gadol knew how to use the Shem Hashem. We're scared that he might see someone's wife and want to marry her, and he'll kill the guy with the Shem HaMeforish. So therefore, he's only allowed to marry a Besula.
So to preclude them. Kill the guy to marry his wife. Why would he care about marrying an
almana? Lamaisa, because an almana, everyone's gonna know she's an almana. If he kills the guy with the shame of Mavorish, no one's gonna know that he's the one who killed him. Right? Almana will be pretty clear. Okay. You have to know from Machleya and Mishnah. Seem one way, Gemaras and other things seem another way. How loud did the Kohen Gadol say? Did the Kohenim? Yeah, no, and not. No. I don't know if it's so clear. Either way. Okay. Sure, I kesevoy ace ki volid, right? What we read on Yom Tovim and in this week's parsha. Why are these behemoths used as the karbonis? Are you leib Yehuda? Why are these used as the karbonis? Sure, kesevoy ace. Why not Hashem pick these as the karbonis? Because the Medrash Kelis says Elikim yevakish hanirdof, Hashem will have mercy on and try to find and help the ones who are run after, just like Avram the Nimrod v'chulu and the Yidden from the Goyim. So therefore, Hashem specifically chose those animals that are chased after, because Hashem will have mercy on them, and that's supposed to be a sign for us that we know Stamazai, what's it called? Each of these animals is like Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. So it's a sign for us also that Hashem should have mercy on us. This famous story with the Brisker Rav, with this pasuk, that he once called a meeting. I think it had something to do with Shechita and Brisk, and there was a certain type of, I think there was an illegal ban on Shechita, and the Shechtim, there were Shechtim who were questionably in halacha still doing some form of shechita. I think maybe at night, I forget exactly what it was, but there was something questionable about it from halacha, but it was a way to slip under the radar and try to still shecht. And there was a huge tumult to try to get it stopped, because so that the people who don't necessarily know if it's okay or not shouldn't need it. So the Brisker Rav called a huge meeting, a secret meeting, but a huge meeting in his house. Lamaisa, one of the shechtim showed up, and the Brisker Rav first didn't even come into the room. Everyone's waiting. Finally, he comes into the room, and he just sits there not saying a word. And everyone's like, all right, let's go. You know, maybe the guy should, they're whispering amongst themselves, maybe the guy should leave already. Obviously, he's not starting because the other guy's not here. He doesn't want to embarrass him, but Lamaisa, you know, when are we going to be able to get everyone together again? We have to work on this and get this taken care of. This is very dangerous in halacha. Lamaisa, Brisker Rav didn't say anything, and eventually people just started leaving, and eventually everyone left. So they asked him, Lamaisa, here's a chayin. It is a problem in halacha. We need to get take care of this. What's going on over here? So he said, the worst thing in the world is to be on the wrong side of Hashem. It says, Elikim yevakish esanirdaf. Hashem will help and seek out the one who is run after. If I would have embarrassed him by telling him to leave or started talking specifically about him in front of him, then he would have become the nirdaf, and we would have been against him, and who knows what would have happened then. At least this way, they're trying to bother us, and we want to stay on Hashem's side. Okay, a very interesting meshchachma. It says in the parsha, you cannot shecht a mother and the child on the same day. Mashkachma says very interesting. What about with the dateline? What about different hours and different cities and time zones? Says Mashkachma, for instance, he doesn't say New York, but just for us, and easy enough, that if in Eretz Yisrael it's 10 p.m. and in America it's 3 p.m. So in Eretz Yisrael it's already the next day. You are allowed to write then Shech the mother, and then immediately following, a minute later, Shech the child in New York, because it's not the same day. Only where it's when it's the same day, but now it's already a day later. You had a chat that you're in somewhere else, and it seems to be at the same point. It doesn't make a difference. Azay zok mesh chachma. Someone wanted to shtel tzu a darki tshuva that speaks about bas b'chalav. Right? We know we wait 1 hour, 3 hours, 5 hours, 5.5 hours, 6 hours between milk and meat. The darki tshuva brings down that the Arizal waited an entire day between milk and meat, and meat and milk. And then he brings down further that it doesn't mean that he didn't mean to wait an entire day. He waited till the night. So someone wants to shtel tzu perhaps that the Arizal was learning the same type of thing, that it milk and meat has to do with the yayim. And if so, then after shkia, technically, a few minutes before and a few minutes after, you should be able to eat one of each type. You have to know if it's really fully what it means, but it could be it's true that there is a mosig of a day. But the Meshech Chachma, that's certainly the Meshech Chachma says what he says, again, about shechting the mother and the son. Did Bnei Yisrael count Sfiras HaEmor in the Midbar? Well, the Emor was only brought in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't bring the Emor in the Midbar. Right? What's it saying? It says, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, then you bring the Omer. So, right? And we keep saying, what's it called? Shisha Yom Ba'Omer, right? But what does that mean? It's not just random. It's not because we're in the middle of Sfiras HaEmor now. It's because we're in the middle of counting the Omer. Fakert, that's a whole thing, whole tumult of whether you should say Ba'Omer or La'Omer. Seemingly, they counted the first night of Sfiras HaEmor. Forget Bnei Yisrael for a second. Regular in the Beis HaMikdash. What do you count the first night? La'Omer to the cutting of the Omer? You haven't cut the Omer yet. Ba'Omer, in the days of when you're going to cut the Omer, that makes sense. It's even though a lot of poskim say Lamed, Lamaisa Minig Ashkenaz, I think, is Beis. Say ba, because lamed doesn't make too much sense according to what we're saying. But anyways, so there was no Omer until Eretz Yisrael. So did they count or not? So lamaisa, the Karen Iris seems to say that they didn't count. The Ran and Psachim says that they counted 50 days from Yetzias Mitzrayim to Har Sinai. The Aruch Chaim says the Takalts Omer, they did count in the Midbar. But obviously, exactly like the Olam saying, that definitely in the Midbar, they counted to Har Sinai to climb up from Mitzrayim to Matan Torah. And Lamaisa, you then again, so you could say these days, obviously, it's Alts the Omer, but it also has that Meshulav with it and evolved. We know there are people who, there's a minig to the Mishnah of the Menches Kiyom Shatar Nikras Lehem in the 6th Parak of Pirkei Avos, that the 48 ways to be kind of Torah, the minig of the yeshivas in Europe was to work on one every day, and then the last day you work on all of them, day 49, and that would definitely seem to show this also, that there's an aspect to the Omer of working on oneself to get to the Tamat and Torah. Lamaisa, what did they say? What did they say in the Midbar if they counted? There was no such thing as the Omer. So you have to know exactly what nusach they said. Lamaisa, you're yoytze if you say hayoyim yoyim, hayoyim yom echad, hayoyim whatever. The machaber says lamaisa, you're yoytze. But what was the chatzil dika nusach that they said? Why? Now it's a machleik, a gantz machleikus. If sphere these days is deraisa, derabanan, or zeichel mikdash. Which is a lower gedder of the Rabban. Okay, just to say over a couple interesting Rambans. First of all, by the Parsha of Mumin in this week's Parsha, of things that would disqualify a Kayin from serving, it says, Dabra al Aaron, speak to Aaron, Ish Mizaracha, a man from your children who has a mum. Why does it say that? Why does it say, whoever from you has a mum? Says Ramban, because an Ish Kaddish like Aaron was Kula Yafeh, and there definitely was no mum, and therefore it's saying, from his kids, okay, things can happen over the Duris. But Aaron was the Spitz, and there definitely wasn't. And so too, he says that the next little parsha where it says about Kainan becoming Tameh, so that, okay, touching a mace or a sheretz, that might happen to Aaron. That's why it uses the lashon and tznichalim. But when it says Saruar Zov, once again, it says Ishish Mizera Aaron. Why? Because Chas V'Shalom, Tzaras or Zov would not happen to Aaron. Kimal Hashem Tzvakesu. As they talk the Ramban. Interesting to Zach about who, what a true leader of Klal Yisrael is and what he's shaykh to. He says Ramban, he's not shaykh to that Bechal. Okay. Second. Beautiful, beautiful Ramban on two aspects: the not doing malacha on Yontiv and Shabbos, and the yes of the menucha. Says the Ramban that what the Torah is trying to bring out with Shabbos is to say as follows: it's trying to say have menucha, even from things that aren't iser malacha. We don't want you to have tircha. We don't want you to be busy all day, because technically you could sit the entire day yontiv, measuring out your wheat, weighing your fruit, filling your wine barrels, moving your big kalim, moving rocks from place to place. If you had an Eruv and the doors were closed at night, you'd be able to carry with your donkeys. You'd be able to carry your wine, your figs, your grapes. You'd be able to do Mecca Chomet. You'd be selling in the marketplaces. Everything would be open. People would be sitting with their money on the table. People would be going to their work that wouldn't have Melachos Daraisa in it. Is that a Yontiv? Is that a Shabbos? Says the Torah, Shabbosan. Even things that aren't Melachos, do not be a day of Tircha. I'll always remember my parents were telling me, trying to bring out bother. Things that take away from the ability of the day to rest and not be busy with other things. My parents told me that many, many, many years ago, I think it was on Yontiv, wasn't necessarily trying to use the Eruv, but they saw a mother and a child. Now again, it could be they needed it, whatever. It looked interesting how they were schlepping a full suitcase, as if, again, who knows what exactly the story was, but at least let's bring out the point from it. On Yontiv, it did not seem the Yontiv way. Maybe they had a story for the reason they were doing it. But you're not supposed to be busy with these things. You say the Yontiv is Shabbosin. And not only that, now that's for the negative. Don't do those things. For the positive, says the Ramban, that you know what the Torah wants from you on Yontiv? What's Mikroi Kodesh? What does that mean? Says the Ramban, it's a day that everyone should be kruyim, called together, v'nesafim, and gathered together, l'kaddish, I say, to be mekaddish the day, because it's a mitzvah on all these soul to gather in the Beis Hashem, to be mekaddish the day publicly, with tefillah, and halal to Hashem, with clean clothes, and to make it a day of festival and festivities. Like the pasuk says in Nehemiah, That's what Hashem wants. That's what Hashem wants from us. So it's taka not stam. Oh, I have nice clothes for Yontiv. Yeah, no. Daven. Oh, let's get the davening over with. This is gufa, a part of the Yontiv. This is gufa, a part of the Mikra'e Kodesh. Okay, this is a massive, massive Ramban. It's something to remember by Yom Nerayim, that the Torah doesn't really explain why we should have Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, on Echa B'Tishrei. Why? Says the Ramban, because it is the month which Yom Kippur is in. Ah, Binyamin Herstu. It's the month that Yom Kippur is in. And that beginning of the month, right, Yom Kippur is going to be Yod. It is Ra'i, that you can't just wake up on tests and then, oh, it's Yom Kippur, now we're going to have Yom Kippur. Right, what's it called? There was a chassan who once said to Mashkech Rabbi Yochum of the Mir that, I'm so lucky, I have two Yom Kippurs this year. So what do you mean? Said, what do you mean? I'm going to have my chassan. And it says, Mechil Savonis. He goes, I don't get it, what do you mean? He goes, no, Yom Kippur, I got Mechil Savonis. Rabbi Yochum said to him, it's impossible to have proper Mechil Savonis without first having an entire Elul, an entire Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Mechuvah, and then come to Yom Kippur? Can't be. Obviously, Chazal say it, but he's trying to bring out the musig of what it is. So it's over here. The Ramban is saying, you can't just wake up to Yom Kippur. It is rightly that the beginning of that month that's going to have Yom Kippur in it, that we should set that day as a day that it makes sense that Hashem will start judging us on that day. And then Mimela will come to Yom Kippur, having worked on ourselves in order to try to get Slicha and Kapara. And that's the true Abba Kamar, but an interesting look at what Rosh Hashanah is. I think David Goldberg brings this down in the Shmuzin. Okay, and just one last thing. It's just always very interesting, I think, to be sitting Yontiv and what's going on with the Ach, right? It says the Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Then it ties it up, and then it says, we want one second. On the 15th day, and it says again, Alach Sukkot. What's going on? Sipurna says, just I think it's Sipurna. I forget where I saw it right now. He says that. First, it said the rega halachas of all the Yom Tovim, that they're all in which they're all similar. Now it's saying, by the way, Sukkot has some different halachas. By Sukkot, there's an extra day. All other Yom Tovim have 7 days. Sukkot has an 8th day, which is the Kodesh day. Sukkot, you got to switch your place of living, and Sukkot, you got to take the lulav and esrog agotin Shabbos.